Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. This is our one-year anniversary episode. 1 year we've been doing this. 1 year, well, I mean, 1 year tomorrow, but there won't be a show tomorrow, although you'll be listening tomorrow. Doesn't matter. So we've been doing this for a year. Thank you so much to all the people who listen to us from our senior VIP members like Brian Alston to our youngest listeners like Lakin Fielder. Thank you all very much for listening to our show and listening to us prattle on about NXT. As a special treat, Justin's not on the show. So that's what you all get for our one-year anniversary. Guys, if you don't kind of at least chuckle at that, I sound really mean. But that is what we got. We've got two of our other three guys here going to talk a little bit of NXT. And I'm going to talk about a show that I attended on Saturday with Wade Keller and Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net. Great guys, both. And yeah, some of the fun I had there. So not going to go too in-depth about that because it was a house show, but it was a great house show. I wrote a piece on it, and we'll see if that goes up here in the next few days. But anyway, let me introduce a couple of other guys who've been doing this since the beginning with us. First of all, Harley R. Padgett.
Yes, hello. I cover Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I'll be doing live coverage of Final Battle, final pay-per-view of the year this Friday night, headlined by Cody versus Jay Lethal for the ROH World title. And it's funny, I was thinking this afternoon about when we started doing the show a year ago tomorrow, we thrown out all these ideas on what can we do on the show, what kind of segments. Maybe we could do a thing where we look at former NXT people on the main roster, how they're doing, or current NXT people, how well they're doing in the main roster. Oh, we could do trivia segments. What about if we did like a history thing? We had all these ideas for different segments and bits and things we could do. And then we started getting so many emails that we just kind of dropped them all.
Right. you can email us, by the way, at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. And yes, it is kind of funny that like it's hard to remember that we actually used to need to try to fill out these shows, or we thought we'd need to.
Yeah, so now it's like we'll talk about the matches, we'll answer the emails, and oh man, we're at an hour and a half already.
Yeah, and so maybe we'll drop trivia here and there, but I think we got a full enough show this time. Tom Staup is also with us.
Yes, indeed. At Tom Staup on Twitter, still stifling my polite chuckles about Justin. And I do there you go. I do the tapings reports for PW Torch. And as we record this today, it's my daughter's 9th birthday, and she got some. It wasn't really a surprise. She knew they were coming. Some NXT house show tickets for, as we record this, tomorrow night. So you can look forward to a report, at least results anyway, results. When I do the live event thing, I usually try to focus on the show, enjoy the show, because that's my chance to just sit back and not have my nose in the phone the whole time. But I'll have some results up for you. And then I guess 6 days from now, as you're probably listening to this, I'll be able to talk about it in retrospect.
So I went to a show on Saturday. The main event of the show was Tommaso Ciampa defending his title against Velveteen Dream. So, yeah, lots of fun there. There was a video.
Did he retain?
He did retain. Okay. I feel like probably given away by the taping schedule. But, you know, they made us believe. They didn't make us believe. But it was still fun. So Velveteen Dream did shoot a video before one of those. Jeremy Borash produces various videos to use for the website, for the TV show, of course, but also when they get to new cities, will produce pieces that are kind of cool for the locals, so have a lot of local flavor. I mention a little bit. I talk a little bit more about this in the article that I think is going up. But anyway, this is they shot him in front of Paisley Park, Prince's recording studio, and his estate in Chanhassen, which is not a city you'd know if you're not from Minnesota, but it's one of the many Twin Cities suburbs here. But that was kind of cool. So we did that. Tommaso did some mic time afterwards. I believe this is the first house show I've ever been to where the heel won clean in the main event, but it worked. So it wasn't anything to fear. Like, I know that sometimes promoters do, because they always put over the face to make sure everybody leaves happy. But in a hardcore wrestling fandom, I don't know if that's necessary. We also got our mid-show main event was Gargano versus Black. It was fun, as you would assume, and it was greatest hits, as you would assume. Didn't try to stretch themselves too much, but it was a fun match. There was a six-man with the Undisputed Era minus Bobby Fish versus Heavy Machinery and Ricochet. There was a fun little video with Ricochet and Heavy Machinery on. This was a big, big showcase for Otis. Otis Dozovic is from Minnesota, Duluth, actually. And he was focused on heavily and just did. He got a really great hot tag, and Undisputed was selling like champs for him. It was lots and lots of fun there. The match that surprised me most and everybody and was just awesome was Dominik Dijakovic. It's Dominik now, right? God, now I can't remember either. Dijakovic against Kona Reeves. It was tons of fun. Kona Reeves had Dan Matha in his corner as a hugely overacting pest, but it was okay. They did a piece on a video too, the heels did, at the Mall of America. So some kind of fun stuff there too. That was mostly the show. There was an intended six-woman match, which is the six-woman match that we feel like we're probably working up to with this set of tapings, which we may or may not get now because of the injury to Dakota Kai. The injury was the night before we saw her. So instead, the matches got changed to LeRae versus Jessamyn Duke with Shafir in the corner, and then Kyrie versus Shayna, which you knew would be fine. So yeah, that was the show. Got to talk to some people, meet some people after the show. A very cool experience, and I cannot wait for NXT to come again. So let's segue into the Dakota Kai injury. Oh boy, the timing on this. I'm going to read you an email from JB. It's JB from Detroit. With the news that Dakota Kai likely tore her ACL, how does this affect the immediate future booking of NXT and NXT UK? Obviously, she was an integral part of the current Horsewomen feud in NXT along with Io and Kairi. Do they simply replace her with another babyface like Mia Yim, or do they somehow change course? As far as NXT UK, it seemed like she was going to be a centerpiece of the women's division there. Any ideas on who they might use to cover for her while she's hurt? As always, love the show and look forward to hearing your thoughts. To add to these thoughts, would it make sense for her to return to a huge ovation with Tegan Nox? Perhaps they can tag together as well. Timeline-wise, I can't answer that question. I don't know that they're going to be coming back at the same time. And we don't know for sure what happened with Kai. Although in talking to some people after the show, it doesn't look good. So I'm not sure how long she's going to be out. I was obviously devastated. She is one of the tippy-top favorite wrestlers of mine on the entire roster, and was really looking forward to her match. And yeah, I didn't know she was hurt until the show happened. So the questions on who might replace her in these various spots. Harley, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously comes down to whether or not she actually... the extent of the injury, which they're being very close-lipped about. So if it's maybe, you know, best case scenario, it's a minor thing and they just kind of cover for it in the same way they've done with Kairi at these recent TV episodes when she was sick at the time, which we'll get to later on. And it's a little awkward that, you know, Io and Dakota are hanging out and doing stuff and Kairi's not around and not even being mentioned, but it happens, I guess.
Yeah.
If it's a long-term thing, if she really is going to be out for months, you know, it hasn't been acknowledged on TV yet, obviously. She's wrestling next week. So it's something as simple as we find her hurt in the performance center. She's lying on the ground. She's holding her knee. And Jessamyn and Marina are walking away smirking. She's out of the picture. More reason for Io and Kairi to be even angrier at these three. And then, sure, they could get Mia. They could get Deonna Purrazzo. They're not doing anything with her right now. There's options.
Right. And it seems like, I don't, for me, keeping Mia separate as a single might make more sense, even though she is superficially the person that makes the most sense to be tapped in there. For some reason, Perrazzo didn't occur to me, but yes, that would be something to do with her. But
yeah, she spent a lot of time in Japan in Stardom with Kairi and Io, so they have that connection.
Right. So hopefully they can find something to do with her if they plan on doing that now. I don't want her to be necessarily rushed if she's going to lose a bunch of matches again. She's done the NXT jobber thing before. Like, we don't need her to do that now. That's not why they brought her back. They brought her back because she's quite good now. So hopefully that's happening. Did I say Io before? Did I actually say Io instead of Io?
We'll forgive you.
Oh,
well,
my
I
God.
Will.
There is a character named Io in a Greek tragedy, and for the life of me, I can't stop saying it when I'm talking about Io Shirai, who I love, by the way.
The number of Greek tragedy wrestling-related mix-ups we have on this show, this year has been riddled with them.
Right. I mean, it's going to happen. It's going to happen all the time.
The time Tom confused Euphrates with... The other guy.
We got nothing.
I was going to say Hippolytus. I know a lot of names if you need me to throw them at you because I have acted in some Greek tragedies. Tom, on this Dakota Kai situation.
You guys have covered what you've covered quite sufficiently, and I agree with your thoughts. So I will just add regarding the Tegan Knox situation. I personally feel like each of these wrestlers has enough individual value that we don't need to pair them together when they return. They've done that, you know, everybody knows they're real life BFFs. They've done a lot of tagging at house shows and dark matches. But I think Dakota as an act and Tegan as an act by themselves, Tegan in particular with the sympathy card here, like whenever she comes back, however she comes back, she's going to get a major sympathy pop. Dakota, it's a situation where you just, I mean, like you said, the timing is horrible because she was finally starting to turn around those crowd reactions that were just really tepid to just not there at all, to really getting warm crowd reception, and boom, gone. So, I mean, unless we get some good news here and a surprise. So you can just hope that when she does return, they put her in a hot spot where it's a fiery comeback, and you're so glad she's back that you like her even better due to the absence. You know, if we want to then transition the Greek tragedy into Shakespeare here. Yeah, I personally wouldn't put them together. I'm not saying it's out of the question because it would be a very easy card to play, especially if we have some form of a women's tag division by that point. But I would vote for keeping them separate.
Yeah, I'm with that as well. I think I'm heartened by the fact that the extent of her injury has not been related to us yet. I guess I'm taking that as a good sign. This could be because I'm just such a huge Kai fan that I'm hoping for that. But I like the fact that it hasn't been spoken to us yet. But there's no downside if they want us to think that it's worse than it is. So we pop bigger when she gets back. I mean, that works. They do that all the time where they say, well, he was supposed to be out for 2 years and he was only out for 8 months. And the reality is, he was going to be back in 8 months, but they made it look better. Like it was his hard work and determination that got him back, you know, because they've done that with Cena. They've done that with a lot of guys. So I don't know. Just want her back, guys. Just want her back.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
So let's get to the show. Undisputed Era started out by Adam doing a little bit of mic time before the EC3 versus Bobby Fish match that we've been working toward. Seems like a pretty good way to use EC3 if they're really gonna throw in with this face turn. I think both face and heel are imperfect for him in certain ways, but if they're gonna throw in on face for him, then having him work against Undisputed Era as a collective might work, because having him be beat down by the whole team kind of works. And then Heavy Machinery got involved afterwards. I do have an email about that. I'll have to see. Oh, yeah, it's Chris Fielder. Hey, bros. So when did Dozer and Tucky start hanging out with EC3? Maybe at a shirtless backyard barbecue, or maybe a new trendy tanning bed? Oh, Lord, a mental image of Dozer trying to fit in a tanning bed may have spoiled my appetite. In my own humble opinion, the only things these three have in common is that the crowd really aren't into them as much as others, and they look like Vince McMahon's idea of a perfect wrestler. I see them all taking the same route as, say, an Elias, not doing very much on NXT, but Vince wetting his pants to get them to the main roster. What do you gents think? Also, I'm writing you this before the main event, but I've already heard that Tyler Breeze got a huge reaction. I really hope they are considering moving guys like him back to NXT. He is far better suited there than being lost on SmackDown Live. Thanks, guys. Chris Fielder, baby. Truth or consequences, New Mexico. Because I will forget that bit about Tyler before we get back to it, probably, I do want to mention that I like what you're saying, but the pay structure would have to change immensely, because there's no way Tyler wants to go back there full time, given the pay, unless he retained the pay that he's getting on SmackDown. The pay is significantly different on Raw and SmackDown as it is to NXT. And I guess they could continue paying him SmackDown dollars, but then how does everybody else around him feel about that? So I don't know. I wouldn't mind NXT being a third and equal brand, but I don't know if that's going to happen as long as it is purely a network exclusive. So anyway, let's get back to Heavy Machinery, EC3, Bobby Fish. I would say about Heavy Machinery being here, they're not really hanging with EC3, but they've got their own beef with Undisputed, and I think it's pretty obvious they're going to be wrestling Undisputed at TakeOver. But Tom, take this match away.
Yeah, just addressing Fielder's email regarding the crowd reactions. As I always say, I know it doesn't really come through the same way on the TV, but I actually don't usually reference crowd reactions in my reports, but I actually felt it was pertinent in this tapings report to mention that Heavy Machinery is still getting huge pops, and that's just me being fine with them. I absolutely do not dislike them at all, but they're not they don't light me on fire. So I guess maybe I'm not biased towards them in that respect, but coming from that position, I have seen them as meandering a little bit. They've obviously still got their thing going on, just like the Street Profits do, or I guess those are the two. Those are the two mid-card. I guess Birch and Lorcan, but they're not as goofy. Anyway, they've got their thing going on. They're not lost, but they didn't have too much direction other than just entertaining the crowd in matches here and there. And I was genuinely surprised that they were inserted into this program with Undisputed Era, and they are, as I say it out loud, it sounds like something that I really shouldn't have been that surprised by, because you can keep somebody
else
warm. but also you keep somebody warm, and then we were sort of talking about it with Humberto Carrillo and Raul Mendoza last week. They lose all the time, but they have a lot of crowd favor. If they were inserted in an important position, then I think the crowd would go wild, and that's exactly what happened here with Heavy Machinery. These guys are getting great reactions, and it took me way too long to say that they got a good pop, but there it is, they got a good pop. EC3, his reactions have died down a little bit since he first came to NXT. The crowd was just absolutely rabid for him, and that carried on longer than the normal fad. Like when the Street Profits reference, when they first came to NXT from the house shows, and they were still doing the red Solo Cup before they got the branded one that you could buy. And everybody wanted to bring Solo Cups into Full Sail Live, and security wouldn't let it happen, because you had to spend $10 on the WWE one. That fad lasted for about two tapings. Handing out NX3 signs, which are not company produced, those are fan produced, that lasted four or five tapings, I want to say. And now he's still very popular, but the reactions have, he's not new anymore. But I guess before I give up some of my time, and I'll jump in later, I will confess that I got this result wrong in my tapings report, because the finish happened so quick. And I really thought to myself, like, it would make so much more sense if EC3 won this match. But from where I was sitting in the bleachers, it looked like the pin was the other way around, just from my vantage point. And I mean, it was watching it on TV. It was very clearly EC3's theme music, but it only played for like 2 seconds while I was still trying to process, like, wait, that was the finish? I need to write something down. I was still writing down what the last sequence was. And I totally miffed it. And I said Bobby Fish won the match. So if you read my report and you're wondering what I'm smoking, it's probably some of EC3's Tanner fumes.
Yeah, that's probably very pungent, very powerful. That is amusing. A misidentity story. Can I do this? I have this pointless wrong identity story that got into my head yesterday.
Well, now you have to.
Now I have to. And it's so unfortunate. It's probably the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen. So my best friend when I was younger, second or third grade, was this dude, Brian. And he was just over the moon because he had started going out with this girl, as we called it, even though we didn't go anywhere. So he sits down to lunch with us, and he talks about his girlfriend. He talks about his girlfriend, Liz. And we're like, what? Your girlfriend is Jessica. Like, all the stuff he was telling us about the beginning of it was true. But, like, he was like, no, I'm going out with Liz. And we were like, dude, the way the girls told it to us, Liz went to you to ask you out for Jessica. And he thought that it was Liz asking him out. So for like 3 days, like a whole weekend, he thought that he was going out with Liz. And he had conversations with her. And he was like, oh, now that makes so much more sense. And like sitting here there watching him just crumble as he ate his lunch was the saddest thing ever. I don't know what made me think of that. But yeah,
I feel like that's a really perverted version of Cyrano de Bergerac or something.
Yeah, right. It was just horrible. And I was thinking back to it like, oh, my God, that was the saddest. I was sitting exactly across from him and I couldn't even look him in the eyes. I was so sad for him. But yeah, that's what you get on your wrestling podcast, gang. Heavy Machinery. I will say, for my part, in response to the email that Otis really got a good reaction and Heavy Machinery got a great reaction live. They do seem like a team that would be more popular live than just kind of holistically and everything like that. So and it's going to be hard for me to take out what I saw that night because Otis was so awesome. And Otis is the one that, if you have been listening to this show, that I've never – I like him fine, but I really, really liked him. And I would say I started getting it on Saturday. And it's going to be hard for me to take that out of the equation, I think. But you're right. You're right, Chris, that I think Heavy Machinery could end up being more successful on the main roster than they are here. Harley, on the opener.
Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing that he said about EC3 is he kind of feels – Elias is Apollo Crews, but Elias is probably a better comparison where not used to his full potential in NXT per se, not in the title picture holding any gold, but just being established to some WWE fans before moving on to bigger things on the main roster. For whatever reason, when he made his entrance tonight, I just – instantly thought he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. He's going to be one of the surprise entrants in the Royal Rumble for sure. Something about the way he's been positioned lately, I feel like he's not long for NXT, and he seems like the kind of person that Vince would rally behind quickly on the main roster. Whether or not it sticks, I don't know. Best case scenario, maybe like Bobby Lashley. Worst case, like a Bobby Roode. It just, yeah, I don't know. EC3 doesn't do much for me, but I'm sure there are a lot of people who, I don't know. I don't watch Raw anymore, but everything I've read about Bobby Roode on Raw seems counterintuitive to everything about his character.
What you have read is correct.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I am not watching it right now either, and nobody is.
But he's holding gold now, so
numbers are what they are. But yeah, that's true.
I will say that the other thing I wanted to add about the segment was about EC3 and how he's translating here. And, you know, we've been on record. I've been on record saying that nothing about him was working for me. And I won't get back into it. Look, going to the backlog. Nothing about it was working for me. And I was not alone on this podcast in saying that. But over the past month, maybe I'll say month, maybe five, six weeks, every time he's shown up, there's just been another thing there. He's taken himself a little more seriously. I guess that really sums it up. He takes himself more seriously, whether it's in a promo or tonight when he's coming to the ring. I mean, sure, he still does the, you know, pointing at the letters thing, but then when he turns around, it's all business, and he's not shouting at the crowd and emoting in a big way. He's more solemn in a way that makes me want to pay attention more when he's just staring daggers through Bobby Fish and sauntering down to the ring without giving the crowd too much more to latch onto. And he got there during the match. He was shouting at the crowd and doing the I absolutely hate the name drop, but I love the name drop. So he got to that point. But, you know, that more, hesitate to say stoic here, but that more serious version of EC3 draws me in more and makes me wonder, like, okay, what really makes this guy tick? Now that we're really getting down to brass tacks with his character, how's he going to handle this? It's not all about wearing nice jackets and being thrown into a pool or what have you. And so, yeah, with stuff like the name drop and stuff like calling himself the top 1%, which is troubling for all the obvious reasons. It's not a perfect act, but I feel like the progression has been there. And every time I've seen him, I've found more reasons to be interested. So I'm optimistic, and I would even go as far as to say that I'm starting to see what it is that people are talking about when certain people say things like, this guy could be one of those golden boys who goes up to the main roster and Vince looks at them and goes, and his eyes just turn into giant dollar signs and they get shot to the moon.
This feud is good for him too, because he can jaw with Adam Cole, who's very good at that, with Fish, who's okay at that. And then obviously he can wrestle with any of the four that are great. And they're all kind of bump machines in their own ways, and they're going to make him look good. So I think this is a great, great, potentially long-term feud for him. So maybe they'll rush this to a match with Adam Cole, but they don't have to. So I think this is a good spot for him. Kind of like that old Big Boss Man versus the entire Heenan family for an entire year sort of thing. Like, a good use for somebody who's like kind of there, but not world title there. So anyway, the next match was Lorcan and Birch versus the Mighty. I don't remember if there was really any hype for this at all. I had internet blips here, so I watched this in a couple of very different settings, so I didn't get a real idea of the flow of the match or anything like that, but as we would expect, which is weird to say about a Lorcan and Birch win, but as we would expect, they did go over the Mighty. And what do you do with them? Because you already gave them the title match before you would have thought that it happened, and they lost that. But how long before you got to give them another? Because or what do you do with these guys? Period. Harley, talk to me about this match.
Longer feud with Forgotten Sons.
Oh my god.
I'm just thinking, like, who else is around, right, in terms of heels on sort of that side of things.
Right. Yeah, that's a good question.
I like, my first reaction to your question was, we need a new heel tag team to, like, debut, somebody new, fresh to come in. But, oh yeah, we have Forgotten Sons. They're forgettable.
Right. Get Sabatelli and Moss back on TV. I don't even know if they're still in the company. I truly do not.
Moss just wrestled at a house show, didn't he?
He didn't wrestle at my house show, but
I saw something about yes, he's back from injury.
I don't know why he wouldn't have wrestled in St. Paul. This is his home. But if you're going to work him heel, I guess it's not necessary that you.
Yeah, he wrestled a singles match against a babyface Shane Thorne.
Weird. Oh.
Yeah. Speaking of weird stuff.
That is weird. So, Shane Thorne worked a singles match in the first NXT show I went to. He's legit. It was a good match. It was him against Dash Wilder because Dawson was injured.
Hey, if you're a fan of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which you obviously are if you're listening to this right now, check out Solomonster Sounds Off. It's a weekly show covering all the latest news in the world of wrestling, from WWE to Lucha Underground, New Japan, and everything in between, plus listener Q&A, rankings, and more. Check it out in iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or download directly from thesolomonster.com.
Well, that was my thing from this match. I've always wanted to invest in the Mighty ever since they first debuted because they had a lot of hype coming in. People were talking about this tag team so great. They have so much potential. And for a long period there, it seemed like they had a lot of potential that never really went anywhere. And then they got injured. And this heel turn, I was really on board with at first. I liked the new look. I liked that they were – I was like, oh, they're doing like soccer hooligans now. They look like they're just going to like – rough you up outside the bar because you, insulted their favorite player or something. I like all this. And yet, I don't know. They've had so many opportunities and they still just come away, even from this match, thinking, I wonder if they're just good hands and they're never going to be anything more than that. Like, they're reliable in the ring. They're solid. They can make the other guys look good. But beyond that, they're probably not going to do much themselves. And maybe I just feel that, especially because going into this match, I actually thought they were going to win. I thought they're going to steal the win here in some sort of crooked way to prolong this feud with Lorcan and Birch. But instead, Lorcan and Birch just beat them for the second time straight. So I don't know what that says about the Mighty.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know for sure who was going to win this match. But I'm kind of getting used to the idea that the Mighty is not going anywhere, I suppose. But yeah, the fact if they don't win this match, then what? Like, do you start giving them enhancement matches again? Because that seems like a weird step backward. Do they repackage them again as they've already been done? Do you start trying to work one of them as singles guys? I don't know. I just don't know what you do with these
guys. Give them a manager?
At this, I guess that might actually breathe some life into this.
We're doing a little bit for Blake and Murphy, a little bit for some other acts.
Yes. Right. Yeah, well, it blew up Blake and Murphy. I mean, it was at the right time for those guys, but yeah, that made sense. On this match, Tom.
Man, I continue to be in agreeable company because to a T, every single one of your guys' thoughts is exactly what was going through my mind as I watched this match, and I felt that the conclusion that I came to was that, so I echo all of that, and then the conclusion that I came to was that I actually was kind of surprised. The taping was the same night as the show that was taped in San Jose, so I had not seen the first Lorcan and Birch in the Mighty match where the Mighty attacked Lorcan and Birch after the bell or after the decision. So I was not expecting to see a return match, let alone the match at all. And I was actually thinking after the feud with the Street Profits, I was kind of ready for the Mighty to be off TV for a little while. And I was surprised to see them at the taping. And I think the reason I'm thinking that at the taping and the reason I'm thinking all the same stuff that you guys are saying is because they aren't treated like a credible threat. And there's nothing really wrong with having a team of good hands in the mid card. The only thing wrong with it is just like Harley was saying, is that we thought that they were going to be a bigger deal. And I came to exactly what you were saying, the Blake and Murphy comparison, because without Alexa Bliss, I felt the exact same way about Blake and Murphy that I do about the Mighty right now. And Alexa Bliss was really the X factor in that team. And I ended up finding them to be an extremely effective heel tag team, especially with that manager there. So I think that could be a very interesting direction to go with them, assuming that they are or assuming that WWE wants them to do anything more than just be good hands on the mid card.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I guess that's about all we can say about that match. Yeah. It's
shout out
odd.
To the boots. Lorcan and Birch's boots were neat. If you noticed that. Red and blue.
Something I normally. Oh yes, I did notice that. Yep.
But like on alternate on opposite feet, so it looked like they have two pairs of boots, but they just happen to have the same boots. Size feet, yeah. So they like swaps. Yeah, it's cute.
Sure. Yeah, so Lorcan and Birch, still love them. Can't wait to see where the heck they go from here. We had a number of segments here in a row as we are kind of starting to see mid-show. We got a lot of this. So we got a little recap of the awesome Black and Johnny and Tommaso segment leading to what we now know is next week's cage match with Black and Gargano. Then we got Gargano talking about it a little bit. From there, we went to Dijakovic. We're going to see him next week. I saw him on Saturday, and wow, what a fun match that was on both parts. Kona was great, too. I want to say that I still believe, and I'm not alone. I talked to some people, and they still believe as well. So we talked to the horsewomen backstage, setting up this tag match that we're going to get next week. Against EO and Dakota Kai, Duke and Shafir. So, yeah, and then we got the news that Lacey made the four-way match, joining Bianca Belair by defeating Xia Li at a house show. So, there you go. Many things going on there, many moving parts. Harley, comments on those.
Okay, so how weird is it that Xia Li and Reyna Gonzalez are being given the same opportunity as Bianca Belair? Like, yeah, you're all incredible number one contenders to the women's title. We haven't seen Bianca in a couple weeks, it feels like, and she should just be so furious by this point.
Right.
But yeah.
Normally you have her respond to things like this because you know it'll be good TV. But, I love adding weight to a match that otherwise wouldn't have weight. Like, why not have a couple of qualifying matches to make it seem like you have to earn something to get in there? But if you're going to do that, like, do the Bret Hart King of the Ring thing where they say, okay, you were champion almost all year. You're in the tournament. Everybody else has to qualify. But that's good for a face. Oh, that could be good for a heel, too. But, I guess I just want to see those angry vignettes you're speaking of here.
Well, okay, I can't ask Tom this, presumably. Kelly, who's the fourth in this match with Bianca, Lacey, and Mia?
I was trying to decide whether I wanted to put a lot of thought into that or be surprised. I guess that I would presume Candace somehow sneaks into this. Not that she ever wins. At the show I went to, she lost to Jessamyn Duke. But I don't know who else is obvious, and I feel like we need a step forward in the Candace LeRae story. So unless this is going to be a surprise, and it could be. They could be saving a surprise name, somebody showing up, somebody returning. Hopefully this wasn't a match that Dakota won and now she can't work. But I'm not sure. I guess if it's somebody on the roster right now, I suppose I'll say Candace.
Yeah, see, nobody came to mind for me. She's probably the best guess, too. I went into my stats. I looked at the women's division right now. Who has the best singles records on TV? in order: Bianca Belair, Shayna Baszler, Kairi Sane, Mia Yim, Nikki Cross. If she's even still in NXT, God knows what's happening with Nikki and Lars Sullivan right now.
Ever. Yeah.
But those five are the only women in the women's division with records above 500, with winning records.
Yep.
Then you go below 500, you've got your Lacey, Dakota, Tainara Conti, then Candice, Vanessa Bourne, and Aaliyah.
So none of the rest of those would be saved for last. Candice is the only one that wouldn't be like, oh, that's
yeah, because it seems like they're keeping Io, Kairi, and Dakota out of this conversation, right?
Yeah,
they're doing this six-woman feud instead of a...
Yeah.
Yeah,
which is fine.
I guess you're right about Candice.
Yeah, I just don't know who else it would be unless they're going to bring somebody in.
Yeah. So there's that. As to all the other segments, I fear that he doesn't have a first name anymore and it's just Dijakovic now.
I guess that's possible. I want to say on the big screen... I think on the big screen we did get Dominic Dijakovic at the show, but that might just be like it's a house show, so
yeah,
they didn't have to think about fixing it.
I'm really liking his vignettes. I was a big fan of his work in Ring of Honor. Like Punishment Martinez, I thought in Ring of Honor, this guy's good. He has a lot of potential, and I'm excited about seeing what the Performance Center has brought to him, especially since he's been there for a while now. He hasn't just arrived like Punishment. He's been there for a while. You watch more vintage WWE than me. Something about these vignettes made me think of Ken Shamrock for some reason. Am I off base there?
I guess early Ken Shamrock, that would work. Before he became Robo Shamrock, who was hilarious and just angry and yelled and screamed all the time. I loved that, by the way. I thought it was hilarious. And a good way to use somebody who was not, like... He wasn't a strong mic presence. He wasn't like the most believable mic presence, but to have him do that and just be like this over the top intense was kind of fun. Yeah, I don't rewatch a lot of Attitude Era stuff because that's not when my brother watched most. And so when he's over, that's what he wants to watch. But lately I've been kind of wanting to go back to Attitude and see if it was as, I don't know. My memories of Attitude are not altogether that great. I mean, the top of it was awesome, but there was a lot of stuff that I feel like was embarrassing to be watching. But yeah, I guess I can accept that as a good comparison for now.
All right. Are we talking about Aleister Black's promo later on in the show?
Was later on in the show. So we'll get there.
Then I'll pass it off to Tom.
Okay.
Yeah, not much other than I'm excited for Dijakovic, despite the name. And the video, I want to say this was a new one. I don't think this is the same one that we got before. It feels like there's a weird disconnect between what he's saying and the setting that he's in. I think they've done a good job of making it look like a legit promo video that you'd see for a boxer or a mixed martial artist. Not that I really know what those look like, but that's the vibe I got, even though I don't think either of those speak true to who Dijakovic is in the ring. What was he saying? Something about the roots of the tree don't crack. And I was like, this guy needs to be standing out with the Bludgeon Brothers and in their backwoods, wherever they are. But I thought it worked. I thought it worked, and it makes you wonder what the guy's deal is. And I'm not sure if we're ever going to get more than just he's a badass. But like I've been saying, I'm excited because, you know, give me as many squash matches as you're going to. We know that there is a long form match expert in Dijakovic that he can really put on something special once they build to that point with him. So he'll be fun to watch. Other than that, kind of unremarkable segments with nothing wrong with it. Progressing stories, that's fine.
Yeah, and Dijakovic, he worked face obviously against Kona at this show, and I think that's the way they're going to push him at the beginning. But no shortage of young babyface guys getting pushes in this company. So who knows what they're going to do with him long term. And he could be one of these that with, like with Mia Yim, where it just seemed like they're just going to present her at first, see what happens and see what they need and see what takes. I don't know. I just feel like he could easily work either way. But we'll see. So,
yeah. So he was, to answer your question, Tom, he was a three-sport athlete in high school.
Oh.
And earned all-league honors in football and basketball in university.
Okay.
But there's no mention on his Wikipedia about any sort of like kickboxing or martial arts of any sort.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Okay. Well, there you go. Mia Yim versus Reyna Gonzalez. That was our next match. A qualifier for the four-way. Mia Yim joining Bianca and Lacey in the four-way match. As you'd think, I don't think there are any surprise names here. You could have had Io and Dakota, but I think they're going to work toward that. We did get a comment from Chris Fielder, who sent two separate emails. He said, sorry for the double dip. I'm really, really digging Reyna Gonzalez. Man, she's got a huge upside. I can't wait for Trips to give her a monster push. I think that this could work. I like what can maybe happen with her as a monster as well. And I like for there to be a monster, even if I don't like that monster in the ring. So if I can like that monster in the ring, that's even better. So I'm hopeful about her as well. I like the presentation. She hasn't ever won on NXT or I don't think she won in the tournament, which is too bad. So as a monster, you expect to win some matches. But yeah, I feel like this is somebody they got in their hip pocket when they want to actually push her as a decent-sized monster. The one other thing that I made a note about was that I kind of dug the Southern Rock theme song she got. It was different. It stood out. It actually sounded like it would have fit on, like, the Young Guns 2 soundtrack, which is it's a really weird thing to say. But I think that's – I like that because it's very different. I like any new theme that is not just some generic rock theme. So a lot of things about her that can go right. But Mia wins, as you would expect, and gets into that match. Tom, what did you think?
It's just one of those moments where it warms my heart to see one of the people from the original Mae Young Classic make their NXT TV debut. I just, you know, as I've said far too many times, that it's getting very old. I just loved that first Mae Young Classic so much. It was very special to me. So I've really latched on to a lot of those people. And Reyna has been very rewarding to watch so far. And hopefully that continues because she showed so much improvement between the first and second Mae Young Classic. And I agree. It was disappointing that she didn't at least advance to the second round this year. The May bit with Jazzy Gabbert, with her, with Kavita DeVee, and there was a new one this year whose name I keep forgetting. Who even beat her? Was it Lacey Lane? Anyway, she sticks her pinkies in the air when she I can't remember her name for the life of me. I never can. They have a tendency to have the monster characters lose in the first round. They don't even have sort of a token one go through a little bit. That's what they've done both years so far. But anyway, yeah, even though I know her finisher is called the tequila shot, I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what she does. I liked seeing her get a shot on the TV show. And I really, if I had to pick out a spot in the match that I really dug, I loved her just you know, it's one of those things where it's not like Mia's creating the movement around her, but there's enough of that. She's more capable than just standing there in the ring while the smaller person moves around her. But it was just a moment where she did sort of just stand still and whip a clothesline, you know, for somebody who's paying homage to Stan Hansen in her entrance. She whipped a clothesline right at Mia, who ducked it. And Reyna was like, oh, you're going to duck my clothesline? Well, I'm just going to hit you with my other arm. And she just swung her other arm and hit Mia in the back. And I absolutely loved that spot. And I don't think I've seen anything quite like it before. Unless maybe that is something from Stan Hansen's repertoire. And I'm just not enough of an expert on him to know. But very, very pleased with this. And I like, you know, selfishly, I just like that Mia has come in and it would be easy to say she's merged into the speed of traffic. But considering how many other people are there and have been working in the performance center in this division for a while, and, you know, being a Mia fan, it's nice to see her come in and get a spot right away. And she's already proven to be a somewhat important person in this division so far, at least someone to beat.
Yeah. Pinkies up is Allison Kay, by the way.
That is her. Oh, man. So I'm thinking of, you know what? Her name is Craven. Is it Jessica Craven? So, yes, you're right. There even was another one. Pinkies up is. Yeah. So I was even mixing those two people together.
Yep. Which can happen when, you know, it's a big tournament. There's a lot of people to try to remember in a small amount of time. So yeah, that can happen. Mia versus Reyna. Harley.
All right. I made this clear on the 2018 Mae Young podcast. Reyna Gonzalez has the worst gear out of anyone in that tournament. They're like chaps because she's a cowboy, but they're jeans. So it just looks like jeans that have the thighs cut out or ripped out or something. I hate them so much. I hate that she brought them to NXT television.
And just like I told you on that episode, because I think I was on that episode with you. All I can say is that at least it's better than the weird Phantom of the Ranchero that she was doing like the first year with just the plain green trunks and sort of the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Well, aside from that, the only thing I have to add is that, Tom, this was not her NXT TV debut.
Oh, man.
It was her singles debut.
I say things like that, and I can hear myself getting myself into trouble. So.
All right. So this was her fourth time appearing on an episode of NXT TV. Her first singles match, but she appeared on May 3rd last year, 2017, in an NXT Women's Number One Contender Battle Royal. She was the first eliminated by Billie Kay and Peyton Royce.
Oh, and she was in the next Battle Royal, too.
Then she returned in October of last year in another NXT Women's Title qualifying Battle Royal when she was eliminated by Santana Garrett.
That one in particular I'm embarrassed for forgetting.
Yeah, and then she apparently had one more appearance, which I don't recall. She might have been – maybe she was one of the women like sitting in the locker room when Shayna came in and lectured everybody.
Yeah, something like that probably.
Something where she was in the background at a performance center and I counted it. That's all I got.
All right. Yes, so there you go. By the way, for other fans of the first Mae Young Classic, so far this four-way is only women from the first Mae Young Classic, Mia, Lacey, and Bianca. And if indeed Candace ends up making it, then it is entirely people from the first Mae Young Classic. This is where we had the Aleister Black vignette. He does not get a lot of these, so this was very interesting. I don't think he's had any. This was, but yeah, it was like Gargano. He got his chance to hype up the cage match next week, and Black did his as well. We also got word that we're going to see Duke Shafir versus Io and Kai next week, along with Black Gargano, along with Dijakovic's first match. So next week, we already kind of know just about the entire show we're going to get. So on that Black vignette, since you seemed like you needed to talk about it, Tom. Oh, wait. No, it was Harley. Harley.
I might be misremembering, but I swear he opened his promo by talking about, like, by saying something like, humans do this, or you humans do this. It was something to that extent. And it's just very weird that he kind of excluded himself from the category of human beings. And then he went off onto a little rant about how people are guided by their other people are guided by their feelings, and their feelings decide everything. And it's because they have feelings. And I just came away from this going, who is this weirdo? And I'm supposed to cheer for this guy? This guy who isn't a human and doesn't have feelings?
He was promoting himself as some kind of sociopath. It was very... Yeah. I loved it because I kind of relate. but yeah, like when he said, I don't feel anything. It's just something I have to do. I got it. I totally got it.
But it's supposed to be really, more of that really Undertaker weird... stuff.
Right. It is.
Like, I'm above weird, and I'm, yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird way to promote a baby face, almost to the point where you have to go Undertaker lengths, which they don't do anymore, to make a guy kind of above it all. And that's just not the way that wrestling is promoted at this point. I don't know.
It's like weird. It's like weird shades of, like... You hear misogynists will do this a lot, where it's just like a man's arguing with a woman. He tells a woman, calm down, you're being too emotional. Like, it's, I'm better than you because I'm not being emotional. I'm being reserved and whatever. And emotion is bad and you're just blah, blah, blah. And that's how he's like treating Johnny. It's like, oh, Johnny's a bad person because he's too emotional. He's too invested in this. I'm aloof and cool and distant. I'm barely even human. So I'm a better person for this.
Yeah, and it probably makes him a face in like Vince McMahon's world, but it's a really dicey way to produce a baby face. So I don't know, but if you follow Alistair on Twitter, he's kind of a weirdo, which I like. But I don't know. They're trying to add dimension to a character, which I normally am not against. But I wonder how much dimension is too much. Oh, God, I feel so gross saying that. But I just wonder how much more we need. Tom, what did you think of this promo?
Yeah, I think I'm probably somewhere in between you guys as far as my reaction. And I'd probably fall more favorable just because it did feel more like, even though he's clearly a character in, like you said, in real life, he some of the things he's saying ring true to the person that he presents on social media. And he mostly stays in kayfabe on social media, but still it's social media. What was the other thing? Oh, right. The interviews, particularly a very recent interview he had with Lillian Garcia that she put up on her podcast, Chasing Glory. He's kind of a weird dude, and he's had a unique past that has crafted him into the person he is, that he's honing the presentation of through Tommy End and now Aleister Black. So it fit for me based on my interpretation of who he is on my television screen. And that was fine. I don't think it made me like him any more or less. What I will say is about the presentation, I don't think we've seen a promo from him quite like this before. And normally I don't like the overproduced, like the Bray Wyatt promo, where you can tell that he's not in some mysterious void somewhere in the Allstate Arena or wherever they happen to be. He's standing in front of a curtain and there's a smoke machine. I like last week when we had Undisputed Era in the truck and they had just like shuffled the camera in there and they were worried about people getting in. Ciampa being isolated in another truck, I think, or Sanity in the stairwell, famously. So this doesn't abide by that reality that NXT usually presents, but I thought this was an effective way to present an Aleister Black promo because, with the exception of last week, which was just such a standout moment in like 2018 WWE wrestling as a whole, like it was such a good promo segment between those three guys. As far as solo Aleister Black promos, I don't think I've ever had anything favorable to say about them until now. And I feel like that has more to do with the presentation, and maybe it's just maybe he had a couple takes at it. I don't know, but I thought his delivery was good. So I dug it.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Oh, sorry, I was muted. I think that this is a good way to have him do this backstage in a controlled environment. That might actually make more sense for him. From a character standpoint, even if nothing else. So, he's not going to be able to do that on Raw and SmackDown, because that's not how anybody does it on Raw and SmackDown almost ever, unless they just kind of change things. And the way things are on Raw, especially in the ratings and everything, maybe they are going to change things. Who knows what they're going to do? So if he ends up being like one of these emergency call-ups from people who realize that it doesn't matter who you call up if the presentation of the show is the same, then he'll get eaten alive. But maybe if he's brought up and there are some changes and he can really do his character to the nth degree, I don't know. You're right. I watch too much vintage WWE, and I'm really wanting something more vintage as far as his presentation, because I really, really think that he could be a big deal for the last 5-6 years that he does this. Anyway, that is Aleister Black, and I like him. So, let me go to an email from Michael McGivern before we get to our main event. We've actually got two more emails. Hi, guys. After going to the NXT live event in St. Paul last night, I'm left being very impressed with what Humberto Carrillo's and his future on the main roster. Tom might be excluded from this question since he's such a regular on the NXT circuit, but have any of you ever been to a live show, blown away by a performer before they made a big name for themselves and went on to have a great career? Thanks, as always, Michael McGivern. First of all, Michael, I was at that show, too. Why didn't you say hi? Because you didn't know where I was sitting. But, I would have loved to do so. Anyway, the match he's talking about, Carrillo had a match with Bobby Fish, and I didn't mention it until now because I knew we were going to get to this email. And it was good, as you would think it would be. And Carrillo got a really, really strong reaction after the match. After Fish won, as you would think that he would, he left, and Carrillo kind of fought to his feet, and he got one of the bigger ovations of the night. People were really, really impressed. Probably a lot of folks who know Carrillo from the show and from the tag team with Mendoza. He really stood out on this particular taping because we mostly got kind of the A-team on this show. So Carrillo was an odd person to have there, but man, he was awesome in his match. And so he will potentially be my future answer to this question. Who did you see before they really, really blew up? I'm sure that I saw some big time wrestlers at the beginning of their careers, but it's hard to think of any. I did see Candice LeRae wrestle at First Ave in Minneapolis, which is an awesome venue, usually a music venue. And it was like 2 or 3 days before she got signed by WWE. That's not to say that Candice was in any way unknown, but it was before she got the call from WWE. What about you guys? Anybody that you saw? Obviously, Tom, you're going to have NXT answers to this. Harley, anybody you've seen live who ended up blowing up?
Well, I'm looking at a card for an ROH show I attended in 2012, and there are tons of guys on there that I wasn't familiar with at the time. From, Jay Lethal defeating Tommaso Ciampa, a guy called TJ Perkins teaming against the Young Bucks.
There you go.
Roderick Strong defeating Fit Finlay, stuff like that. I mean, they were still, most of those guys weren't at the beginning of their careers either. Like Roddy was already well established in ROH at that time. He was defending the TV title. But yeah, just it's cool getting to see these people before they break big. I don't go to enough indie shows here in town to really see like the next generation of big names, although I really should.
Yeah, I also saw All Ego Ethan Page at that show that I was talking about, and I would not be surprised there. Shane Strickland was there as well. Shane Strickland is not an unknown on the indies. He is one of the most treasured indie names, and he's signed now, so he's probably going to blow up, so he'll be a future answer to this. I saw him in a four-way, but I talked about that last week, so I don't need to talk about it now. Tom, anybody
maybe
else?
He'll answer Ricochet Open Challenge.
Ooh, that might be an interesting way to bring him in. And win or lose, that'd be big.
The first time I ever saw Strickland was in Wrestle Circus, but the first time I ever saw him live was against Ricochet. And go figure, it was amazing. It was funny because Tessa Blanchard was there, and she was very, very near me. And it was an incredible match. But everybody was just really into it, and she was the only person who was chanting, "This is awesome," trying to get it going for her then-boyfriend, Ricochet. And it was just like, oh, Tessa, you don't – just enjoy. She's great. I am not trying to make fun. Anyway, I'm looking – you know, most of my answers to this are going to be things like a Strickland that are like – it wasn't a secret that they were going to be a big deal or that they already were in the world that they were in. You know, I've referenced the Strickland Riddle match that I've watched, and that was the first time I had seen Riddle a couple times, and that was the first time that I was like, hey, this Riddle guy is something. And you know, but that wasn't like a new discovery. Another sort of weird answer would be going to a WWE house show, and they had a surprise NXT match between then NXT wrestlers Baron Corbin and Tyler Breeze. And that was the, you know, I felt like I was the only person in the crowd who recognized them. So for some people, that would have been a new exposure. For me, that was the night they gave Baron some mic time, and I'd never heard the guy talk before. And that was the first time that I was like, he can develop some heat with the crowd. It was pretty good. They did something where Tyler Breeze surprised him with a roll-up win. And Baron, and then he got out of there before Baron beat him up after the bell. And then Baron left just dragging on the crowd, just a sore loser, very whiny. And I was like, huh, this guy might have something. And maybe that's still yet to be proven. I'm more favorable on him than some. So I think all of my answers that I would come up with are kind of weird ones like that, or they're ones that haven't quite proven themselves yet. I have Babatunde earmarked. I think that he might be a big deal. He could be one of those. Like, I also, this is kind of random, another one that's like, well, it's not going to be a surprise that she'll be a big deal. Casey Catanzaro, even though I don't want to get into that too deeply. I wouldn't be surprised if someone like her and someone like Babatunde actually skip over NXT TV and show up on the main roster. Just because of her name value and the move to Fox, that could be a draw there. And Babatunde is one of those guys where you can debut him almost the exact same way that you debuted Braun Strowman. And it's just like, holy cow, who's this big guy? They kind of already did that at the Greatest Royal Rumble, but I don't feel like anything that happens on those shows counts. Like, no. Everybody's all upset about the World Cup, and I'm like, man, it's just something that the Crown Prince wanted. And I guess they are still lugging it around on SmackDown. So there is something to that, I suppose. But I'm very guilty of talking way too long. I do have something of an answer that might count here, though. I scrolled back all the way to 2008, September 2008 on my Facebook, and looked at this album of very, very blurry cell phone pictures from a TNA taping that I went to. And I was scrolling through to see, you know, it's mostly people that are like, oh, yeah, they used to be in WWE. Oh, yeah, they used to be in WWE. But there has to be someone here, right, who I didn't know at the time. And maybe I recognize them now. And there's a picture of a dude in here who I don't even have a caption on there because I couldn't remember who his name was when I uploaded this album. But it's totally Jay Lethal. So maybe that's the best answer I have to this question.
All right. So there you go. Lethal. Got there in a roundabout way, but we got there.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, and Matt, I scrolled to the next picture, and it's AJ Styles.
Well, Matt Riddle was mentioned, so we were going to go to my last email from Patrick Alog. Hey, guys, have you checked out the WWE PC YouTube page? I think they've done a great job humanizing Matt Riddle and his family. Do you think the content they produce should be used on NXT TV to better introduce him, or is it too kayfabe? Also, it was pretty bittersweet to see Dakota Kai talk about a match next week after I unfortunately saw her injured in Green Bay. Patrick Alog, Green Bay. So, the only thing worse than me not being able to see Dakota the night after she got injured would probably be to have seen her get injured. That is unfortunate, Patrick, that you were there for that. As far as the WWE PC YouTube page, no, I don't spend a lot of time on the YouTube pages. Just don't have the time in my wrestling schedule for that, I suppose, which is too bad because when I see some of their YouTube content, I actually kind of dig it. So I haven't seen any of that. As far as humanizing Matt Riddle, absolutely 100%. Let's figure out a way to do it. He's going to get over in a lot of ways on his own. Don't do it too early because he might work as a main eventer even without that. But it could be that you might want to save some of this when you actually want to push him to the next level. Because right now what he's doing works for the mid card, but it might not work for the main event. So for the main event, you humanize him a little more, make him a little more real, and maybe you do it then. But I don't know. I think we get Riddle, but we wonder how it's going to work when we know there are going to be some detractors for the character specifically. Harley, what do you think here?
I have nothing.
Sweet. All right.
I haven't watched those YouTube videos, and I'll comment on Riddle when he shows up again.
Okay. Anything, Tom? Do you think that's something that Riddle needs right now, or do you think he's fine as is?
I honestly feel like they could do it at any time, because as we've seen with Roderick Strong and the Mighty and Ember Moon and so on and so forth, they can do these packages for even someone like Ember Moon. I was about to say that there are do's and don'ts with people who have more, like you probably wouldn't want to see it about Aleister Black. But they do such a good job with these videos that I say throw it in any time for someone like Matt Riddle, whose character is not so outlandish that seeing him in a real life context would break the illusion. Those videos almost always make us care more about the characters. It came up on the Wade Keller post show recently talking about Ember Moon and is she supposed to be a werewolf? Is she a Twilight vampire? Like, what is she? And we were kind of asking those same questions, and we got the behind the scenes video package of how much it meant to her to get accepted into WWE. And I think we all unanimously agreed that we liked Ember more than ever from seeing that package, more than anything else that she had done. As far as the YouTube as a whole, I guess I'm very selective about what I do and don't watch. I usually consume most of that. They share a lot of similar stuff on their social media pages. Just today, again, as we record this, I know a lot of you are probably listening to this on Thursday. It's probably still up there if you want to see, like, on their Instagram pages. And honestly, a lot of the wrestlers shared this stuff too. They did some sort of event today. I don't know if it was holiday themed, but there were 10 different things that they did. There was some of them were athletic, some of them were a little silly. They did a Smash Bros tournament. They did an egg toss. There was a push Coach Bloom's truck, and I think it was teams of four that would see like how far they could push the truck or how long it took them to push it a certain way, and it looked fun and athletic and camaraderie building. But there's also that little thing of like, well, you've also got Tommaso Ciampa wandering around wearing a pink t-shirt and laughing with the mid-carders. So you might not want to put that out there too much. And that same YouTube channel recently did a behind the scenes video of Nikki Cross talking out of character about how much it meant to her to be wrestling in the Staples Center. And that I actually didn't like that video because I felt like it totally negated. Usually I'm okay with that. Usually I can remove myself from the context, but maybe it was just because this, I want to say this even became available on the YouTube page before they aired the match. Maybe I want to say that was the case. I might be wrong. I'd have to look at the date, but I felt like it totally took me out of the match when I did watch it. So there are some do's and don'ts. And Mr. A-Log, if you want to, I mean, maybe I'm just not digging around in the right places online, but I've looked for more detailed reports on what actually went down with Dakota Kai, and with the nature of the injury, maybe it was just planting the foot wrong and you don't really know what happened, but I would be very curious as to how that all went down. If you would be so kind to write in, if you felt like that was something you wanted to do, you know, I of course was in the building when Tegan Knox had her injury recently, and it was just a very obviously a hard experience for her, but the audience, you could tell everybody just got so quiet. You could hear the AC unit kicking on and off. Everybody was just dead quiet, so concerned for her. And I was curious if it was a similar situation.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right. Well, we have one match to talk about. Ricochet defending his North American title against a surprise opponent. It is Tyler Breeze. A true surprise for me. I don't know that I put a lot of thought into this, but if I had thought about it a lot, I wouldn't have come up with this. I joked before we got on the show that, of course, it was him, because when you needed somebody to lose a title match in early NXT, Tyler was your guy. He lost a lot of title matches and matches to get to title matches. As good as he was and as many main events as he was in, he main evented TakeOver. So, fun match. Ricochet wins, as you think he might. I guess it wouldn't have been a total shock if they had done a hot shot here, but they kept it simple, as NXT usually does. They did the right thing here and kept it on the full-timer here. This is probably it for Tyler. I assume that this was a one-off for Tyler, since he didn't really have any mic time or anything to say about this. But yeah, Ricochet versus Tyler. Fun main event. Harley.
Yeah, really fun. I was not expecting Breeze either. I originally thought it was going to be Dijakovic until they said that next week that he was re-debuting. And then I was thinking, yeah, who is this going to be? They're building this up. Who could this possibly be that isn't going to be a letdown? And I honestly, I don't think I had any real answers. I don't know what I was thinking, but Breeze was a fun one. I wasn't thinking him, and the fans loved him, of course. To have him back, to get to see him, you know, feeling a little bit re-energized, getting to actually wrestle a match in front of a TV camera. It's been a while for him.
And a singles match that had something on the line. It was very odd to see, and I don't know that this builds into anything for him, but man, it'd be nice if it did.
No, he is, he's right up there with Mojo Rawley and Sanity and Billy and Payton, where they're making the big money to wrestle on house shows, I guess, and that's it. And I don't know, maybe they're happy with that. Maybe they're, I can't imagine they are, but they're getting paid. That's something.
Right. There's got to be some professional desire there that's just completely unfulfilled. So, but yeah, what's the...
Yeah,
what's the breakdown there? Some of them might just be.
I know there are some people who are probably thinking right now, bring him back full time, bring him back to NXT, let him stay here for a while. They did it with Emma She went up to main roster, did this bad comedy stuff with Santino for a while, got arrested for shoplifting, yeah. Sent her back to NXT, and it was great. She came back to NXT, revitalized. They put her with Dana Brooke. She got her her one glove and her cop sunglasses and became so much better and totally different person. Even Cesaro was on the main roster but spent a long time in NXT doing stuff with Sammy, and it works. Except for the fact that there's just too many people in NXT right now.
Right.
Right? Like, what, Keith Lee debuted and then has gone nowhere. And same with Deonna Purrazzo. Same with Candice LeRae, for that sake. So, sure, you could bring Breeze back and do stuff with them, but at whose expense? Who's getting cut for TV time then? I don't know. And WWE in general just has too many people on the roster right now across every show.
Right. And if this becomes a 2-hour show, then like how overexposed does it end up being? Because how much more focus? Because then if this is a 2-hour show, then the main storylines never get a breather. They never get a week where they're just, you're going to see these people in the ring doing more jobs than they should. And things like that. Even if this goes to 2 hours, even if the intent is to feature more people, that is going to be an unfortunate byproduct. So I hope there's no plan to do that. But
like NXT, ROH, Lucha Underground have all done a pretty good job of showing that 1 hour is the perfect amount of time for a weekly television show. 1 hour
and
three or
Raw
four
did that. Raw did that for a while. So at the beginning, Raw was 1 hour.
Yeah.
So hard to believe now, but Raw was 1 hour for kind of a while.
As to the Ricochet side of things, this is the perfect position for him. This was the same role that he basically had in the first season of Lucha Underground, which was just fighting champion. Every other week, every 2 or 3 weeks, he'd be out there in a long-form match against somebody else and just getting both of them over in the process. Both of them just having such a great match that you came out of it liking both guys more, being invested in both guys more. So I'd love to see him continue to do these things. The only thing I would say is I'd love to see Ricochet do this open challenge series, but have it be non-title, because that takes something away from me. Like, I was excited to see Breeze, but I did not think he was going to win the title here. If it was a non-title match, that's a different story. Maybe he wins a non-title match in order to earn a title match at the next TakeOver or on a future episode of TV. That's something I can buy into a bit more than him putting the title on the line each time.
Right. I wonder how this changed your stats, because I know that Tyler already did not have one of the most sparkling win-loss records in NXT. And this, he came back and actually made it a little bit worse. So
You might be surprised.
Really? Did he, like...
In his total NXT career, Tyler Breeze's singles record is 30 wins, 20 losses, okay. And one no contest.
And on the for the televised?
Yep, for weekly TV and takeovers.
Man, he worked a lot of matches. That's got to be right up there, huh?
Well, okay, so here's one last stat before we turn things over to Tom. This week marked Johnny Gargano's 93rd episode of NXT that he has appeared on. That passes Sami Zayn, who had 92. Only two full-time wrestlers, I should say. Like Regal, the announcers, they've appeared on lots of episodes. Only two full-time wrestlers have appeared on more episodes of NXT than Johnny Gargano at this point. Bayley at 105 and Tyler Breeze at 95.
Okay, so it was a lot.
Yeah, Tyler Breeze, okay. more appearances than any other male wrestler in NXT history.
There you go. And wants to make sure that he keeps that. He's going to defend his title. All right, Ricochet versus Tyler Breeze. Tom?
If I remember correctly, Emma alleged that there was a self-checkout error when she was trying to purchase that iPod. So,
yeah, I don't think she was actually like arrested or anything. She was stopped, right. And there was a scandal.
I don't know whether we can believe that because we like her so much. I want to believe her, but you know,
she is Australian. I mean, we know how that country was founded.
Oh boy. So yeah, there was a please don't go chant at the end of the match, and he did receive Tyler Breeze received a wonderful reaction. He's very, very well liked in these parts as I feel he is in our circles. He's legitimately one of my favorites of the modern era, even though we barely ever get to see him. You know, he's got everything else to back it up, but just his take on the narcissist gimmick is one of my very favorite gimmicks of in recent years, up there with Bo Dallas's motivational speaker. I love it so much. And he just sells every aspect of it beautifully. And it was really cool to see him come out. You know, saw him at that WWE house show that I mentioned. And I feel like every time I see him, it's a surprise, because I didn't know there was going to be an NXT match at that house show. Didn't know he was going to be sitting a couple seats down from me for one match at at this year's Mae Young Classic, and had no idea that he was going to be the guy wrestling Ricochet. And if they're going to do this kind of thing with main roster wrestlers, I like it in the surprise one-off context. The most recent house show I went to was the one where Cesaro came out at the end. He didn't wrestle a match, but he helped Cassius Ohno run off the Undisputed Era and had a promo afterwards. And that was exciting, and it was a nice surprise. And it felt like it was building people up rather than taking people down, which is exactly what Tyler Breeze was doing here. And, you know, yeah, it was nice. Kind of cool to see Ricochet win with a move that's not his established finish. They've been Seth Rollins did that recently in a match with another an open challenge match with Dolph Ziggler. And I feel like there was another one recently where somebody won on a move that whatever. It might be something that's sort of an undercurrent right now. Maybe two examples is not enough to form a pattern, but
there's a lot of it in New Japan, which yeah. I love, because you get a new move over and you create doubt for all matches in the future.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yep, absolutely. I think Sami Zayn has won with a blue Thunder Bomb one time it happened, to my memory. But it's a pretty darn good non-finish signature yep. move. So yeah, no, it was a nice little match, you know, part of, and these guys have worked together on some house shows recently. I want to say that Tyler Breeze has continued to live locally, and it's been easy for him to pop up at some house shows, and he's worked Ricochet a couple times. And you could tell from watching this one that they were relatively familiar with one another from having done those. I think there were a couple spots that I feel were more fluid than they would have been had this been their first encounter. But yeah, I think, you know, with Breeze, we've talked about it on the show before, and I have, particularly with the pay scale thing, but I have trouble advocating for more of an influx of main roster wrestlers, but he is one of those ones. I don't know if you can hear my Elf on the Shelf reminder going off on my phone right now. If you can, sorry about that.
But now we know that it was happening.
He's one of those ones that I think he was so well respected in NXT, and he's just been so lost on the main roster that seeing him come back to a context where it feels like he could be relevant again, it's like, you know what, man, you're going to be one of the exceptions. We're happy to see you, but we're also happy to see you in a place where you can be effective and be successful. And, you know, we're talking about Tyler Breeze always losing title matches. That's when there was only one men's singles title. If there was a North American title when Tyler Breeze was around, you better believe that would have been his title. He would have owned that thing.
Yep. That would have made perfect sense for the kind of heel that he is. It's the kind of thing they could have created for him, but they created it for Adam Cole. Or at least we were talking about them creating a title for Adam Cole. And shortly after that, a title was created and he ended up winning the first title. He didn't have it for very long, but he was first. But yeah, that would have made sense for him. That was the show. I did want to, the stupid thing that I was thinking, earlier on, Harley was talking about Reyna having some of the worst gear. I wanted to jump back to a match that I watched with my brother a few weeks ago. Why did we watch this match? I don't know. I just thought it would be hilarious. But it was Techno Team 2000 against Mike Curry and John Crystal, a couple of jobbers. Techno Team 2000 was a a team they tried. Eric Watts was one of them. I don't remember what the name of the other guy was. Well, they were Troy and Travis in the company. And they had silly gear, but it was actually the jobbers in this match that I wanted to call out because they are wearing jean shorts that are rolled up fairly far. And it's almost worth seeing just for how stupid it is. We laughed for the whole match. I thought it was silly enough when I was young and people were rolling up the jeans, but these guys rolled up their jean shorts, like, considerably. So maybe worth looking at as far as bad gear. But they were jobbers, so who knows? It made them memorable. That, I think, is our show, our anniversary show, and we thank you so much for listening all year if you were one of those who listened to us all year. I don't know if there's anything else more to cover. If not, I am Kelly Wells. You can find me online everywhere at Spooky Milk. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Staub on Twitter. Apparently, I had my talker ready tonight, so thanks for tolerating it. And hopefully there were some nuggets in there for you, and I'll have the report for the live event we're going to up soon.
Yeah, we did go a bit long. It's after 10. That's not common for this show. Harley, who are you?
I'm on Twitter at Talking Honor. And yeah, I got to be up for work in 6 hours. So good night.
Oh, jeez. Sorry, Harley. We love and respect you. That's our show, gang. We will see you for year two starting next week. Cheers.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.